For me, there is no more magic in technology. Whatever the complexity, whatever the smartness of technology, it's never enough. Even the most advanced AI, you can show it to everyone. So, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next?
Welcome to Barriers to Entry, the podcast where every episode we get into it with the leaders, the designers, the early adopters, and the influencers who are driving innovation in the architecture and design industry. It's the metaverse, it's AI, it's blockchain, and it's all happening here. I'm Bobby Bonet, an executive vice president at Sandow Design Group. And as always, I'm joined by Digby co-founders Andrew Lane and Tessa Bain. And we're back. Back-to-back weeks of BTE. How exciting is that, Andrew?
I'm exhausted already, Bobby. the back-to-back weeks has taken a lot out of me. Tess, you were pretty well rested coming into the new year, but how are you holding up?
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually feel really great. I feel like I'm like kicking off the new year, high energy, ready to go, total opposite, and super excited, you know, to be back on the pod in 2024.
And our listeners don't need to know that it was weeks between the two recordings, do they?
Yes. That'll be our little secret.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
2 weeks, though, two amazing guests. And before we get to this week's guest, we do have an exciting and funky little episode, I would say, coming up next week. It's our hotline episode where we'll be incorporating some user-generated content into the episode. Yeah. So the theme for 2 weeks from now, we'll get back to our regularly scheduled programming, we'll be bringing in predictions from past Barriers to Entry guests for what they're looking ahead or expecting to happen in 2024 at that intersection of design and innovation. So Andrew, Tess, and I have been listening to the voicemails.
I love having an answering machine, by the way, Bobby.
I know. Isn't it nice?
It's pretty fantastic. I'm excited for the answering machine to blow up to the point where people will call in and get that message that says, this mailbox is full, and get that frustration really happening for them. I think that's going to be an exciting moment for the pod.
That's always our goal, is to frustrate the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you do want to call the hotline, the number, easy to remember, by the way, 917-934-2812, 917-934-2812. So call in, leave us a voicemail on the BTE hotline, and you might be featured on a future episode of Barriers to Entry. Should we get into this week, though, Andrew and Tess?
Can't wait.
Let's do it.
So Maison Objet is just around the corner. And so we're lucky today to be joined on Barriers to Entry by Matthew Lenore. Matthew is a Renaissance man pushing the limits of design through magical experimentation. I think it's fair to classify Matthew's work into three formats: pieces, places, and solutions. Some of those solutions include cell bag, a water transportation bag, once upon a dream, a smart sleep installation, and tomorrow is another day, the weather experience. Notably, Matthew is also the designer of the 2024 Paris Olympics torch and Maison Objet's 2024 Designer of the Year. Let's get into all of this and more. Welcome to the show, Matthew. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
And when we read about you, Matthew, and I mentioned it right at the top of the intro, the word magic always pops up. And I'd love to know, and I think Andrew and Tess would love to know as well, how do you harness the idea of magic in your creative style? And why do we hear the word magic always, you know, juxtaposed alongside your name?
Actually, for me, playing with magic, it's always a way to combine different approach. I mean, working very closely with technology, with very specific techniques, with science sometimes, but the purpose of that is not to make a tribute to technology or even tribute to craftsmanship, but to always try to create a relationship, a weird sometimes relationship between a user and a things. Because my job is building things, but a things is just a thing. So the idea is trying to create a kind of energy between a thing and a human being by kind of invisible vibration that I call it magic.
Is there a point in your design process when you're building something and, you know, that magical spark happens, or do you set out to create magic? You know, is it something that just happens by accident and you've figured out that way, like a magician, to make that magic just happen intrinsically during your design process? Or do you know how to create it? I'm wondering if there's like a little bit of that kind of magical energy that just happens to pop up in a Matthew Lenore project.
It's never happen by accident. It's always start with a kind of scenario in mind by something I want to create, thanks to the piece, and trying to build something, not sometimes new, but sometimes that never been seen before. Just to give you an example, one day I was just in front of a sideboard, and on this sideboard, as a very traditional sideboard, there was a kind of delicate and beautiful vase and glass vase on top of it. And I was thinking, okay, we are doing the same since decades and even centuries. And could we try to turn it upside down? And can we imagine that the vase, the delicate things that appear to be fragile, might be the things able to support, able to carry on the heavy things as a sideboard? So it started in that way. And from that, thanks to the techniques I learned, thanks to the craftsmen I work with, we have been able to put a massive weight of marble just displayed on that appears like fragile and delicate blown glass vessels. But of course, to make it happen, you need to clearly know the materials, you need to clearly know the processes. And it's not the question of, because I'm not working as only image or 3D renderings, but the idea is to, at the end, put it into reality. So, and the magic appear in the reality. So to make that, the idea, it's from this very simple idea to make a lot of tests, to make a lot of crash tests sometimes, and to being able to step by step to erase, to make disappear any technical element, just to keep the initial and very first idea and initial intuition.
I love the intro about magic and how much you've talked about tech, and it really makes me think. There's a famous science fiction writer, Arthur C. Clarke, who one of his laws was that any sufficiently advanced technology is basically indistinguishable from magic. And part of your work, some of the people who you collaborate with include scientists and engineers as well as artisans. So how is that dynamic at play in your design process? You've mentioned technology a couple of times already. How are you thinking about all of those intersections in order to achieve all that you've just described?
The main thing is, for me, before contacting specialists, scientists, or whoever the skills, it's first of all to take time to learn the language. When you need to push the door of someone, of any specialist, you need from your side to spend time to learn a lot about his skills, his domain. And after that, to never forget your initial idea, your initial intuition, because when you start doing the process, sometimes you forget what you was looking for. So it's super important for me to always keep next to my computer the initial sketch, to never forget. So whatever the time that a project will take, to always go back to the initial idea. Sometimes it may appear as naive, but for me, it's always the essence of the idea remains the initial sketch. So whatever the challenge we have to go through, whatever the problem we have to solve, the idea, it's never forget. And sometimes during a project, you want to make something, and sometimes it takes a decade, you know, because just to give you an example, since very long time, I wanted to create a way to recreate the perfect liquid effect into the marble, to recreate what the perception you get in front of the ocean or in front of the sea. I mean, just by feeling that, okay, you are at the right place at the right moment and in front of the sea and the ocean, actually, you never think, you never need to talk. You're just enjoying the fact that, okay, I am in front of something bigger than me. And 10, maybe 15 years ago, I wanted to find the best way to recreate this liquid effect. For that, there is many ways to do it. You can ask the best sculptors to recreate and to mimic, actually, the relief of the sea. You can take some high-resolution photos and turn it into a kind of 3D relief in real. But it was not the good way. So sometimes you need to wait a lot, and waiting for the right process, waiting for the right technology to turn the initial idea into reality. So for me, just for this idea, it took, yes, probably 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, your portfolio is unbelievably fascinating. I think you've referenced already your Happy to Be Here console, which is probably one of my early exposures to your works and one of my favorites, as well as I believe we're discussing Ocean Memories, also another favorite piece, yeah, which I think is so beautiful. We are going to get into what's coming up for you in 2024. But before we do that, can you take us through your favorite solution that you've created over your career, and then the role that technology played in that design process?
Maybe if I had to select one, I would probably choose a project that Bobby mentioned in the introduction, that called Tomorrow is Another Day. That is what you mentioned as a Wither experience. And what I love in this project, first of all, is the commission itself. And the commission came from the head of an hospital in Paris. And he came to see me and ask me, I wanted you, Mathieu, to design something, might be a design piece, an art piece, whatever, for our palliative care departments. It means I would like you, Mathieu, to design actually what's going to be the last piece, the last object that people will see in their life.
Wow.
And for that, I decide to create and install to every single room of the departments a kind of circular Hublot, a circular window, actually, with a LED screen inside. And this piece will be able to display continuously what will be the sky of tomorrow. My idea was to make the people who are going to live the last days, maybe weeks of their life, to always see what tomorrow will be. Always, whatever, if they will be alive tomorrow, they will always get this kind of step forward to what the sky will be. And this, for example, I need to use technology for that, of course, because it has a kind of LED screen inside. But more than that, I didn't want to make people in those rooms being in front of a kind of a video loop, you know. Right. Initially, I was expecting, okay, we're going to broadcast probably 30 different skies, rainy, cloudy, stormy, sunny. But in that way, since people will stay all day long in the room, they will probably recognize the cloud that they saw in the morning to the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So actually, they would not open them up to the tomorrow, but probably they make feel that, okay, I am into the closed loop, actually. So for that, we decide to change our ways, and we develop a very complex program able to gather all the information coming from the biggest weather forecast worldwide, and being able to get all the parameters and information about speed wind, about brightness of the sky, about density of the cloud, about all those type of parameters, and creating an animation in order to be sure that the cloud that's going to be seen in the morning, you will never see it again,
right,
just like in the real sky. So in this project, for example, I needed to work with very specialist programmers, different type of skills. But what I love, it's at the end, the patients never think about the behind the scene of that, the technological behind the scene. They're just in front of the kind of artificial window. And from that, we add another feature. It means that every single patient can choose his own sky.
Right.
So if they're coming from Africa, America, Asia, Tokyo, Los Angeles, Bamako, they can ask to the staff, can you connect me with Paris? Can you connect me with San Diego? Because my relatives live there and I want to be connected with them thanks to the sky.
That's definitely the magic.
Yeah, no kidding.
That it's indistinguishable, right? That people just are in the experience. But that's incredible the way that you've gone through that rigor.
What was the reaction you got to that, Mathieu?
It was super moving feedbacks coming from the patients themselves, coming from the relatives. And from the relative, it was very interesting because, as you may imagine, when you open the door of your father, your mother, your son, we're going to probably pass away in the next coming days, it's super difficult to find a topic of discussion because the human beings always talk about the future. We are continuously talking about the future. Tonight, tomorrow, the next weekend, next holidays, when I'll be retired. And with a people who has no future by definition, it's super difficult to find a topic. And just by this simple piece, just by playing on the idea of the weather, actually, it was a super good starting point for the conversation because you open the door and you say, oh, look at the sky in Bamako. Oh, not super sunny, you know? And okay, you go back to the reality. You go back to the daily life. So it was the first feedback. And another second super moving feedback I received was a mother coming from Africa, North Africa, as I remember. And she was based in Paris, so in this department. And she decided to change the sky every single day or couple days. One day she said, oh, I would like to be connected with Tokyo. And the day after, I would like to be connected with Washington and LA and so on. And of course, the staff of the hospital said, of course, no problem. They arrive with their iPad and select the sky requested. But after a few days, one of them asked to the woman, but why do you want to change continuously the sky? You can do, of course, but why? And the woman explained that, okay, because my son is a pilot. So thanks to your specific and magic windows, I can always text him what will be the weather when he's going to land. So thanks to this, actually, I can remain a mother to the very end of my life.
Wow.
Oh, I love that.
So love the fact that, okay, you use technology, okay, you use some super complex program and complex softwares, but at the end, and for me, this is the only purpose of my job, it's to make this woman feeling, okay, I will remain a mother to the last second of my life.
Mm. I do have one really quick question, just a quick follow-up on that. So it sounded like, Matthew, when you were commissioned or asked to work on this project, that maybe the hospital was probably thinking much smaller than what you ultimately developed as a solution. How often does that happen where, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a spirits company, whoever it may be, somebody comes to you and says, I'd like for you to design or develop or build something, and you come back with something that just, you know, explodes outside of the barriers of what they were imagining. Is that pretty typical for you, where they're expecting maybe an object and you come back with something that's just, I'm going to use the word one more time, and I won't use it anymore, but magical?
No, it's not, of course, it's not very typical, but in my career so far, I received very specific commission like this. It might be a priest, it might be this head of hospital, it might be a surgeon for another topic. The first thing I discovered, thanks to this commission and thanks to those guys, it was actually designers themselves sometimes are too much traditional, conservative. And for me, it's a big surprise what to discover that the rest of the world, I mean, outside of our creative field, are sometimes more open than we are. And as you may imagine, probably the head of the hospital, probably the priest or the surgeon do not read or consult design blocks. But they have understood that a designer is probably one of the best persons to propose some new potential relationship in their context.
Hey, listeners, it's Bobby and Andrew from Barriers to Entry. You do not want to miss our episode with Lisa Gralnick from IF Design. If you're a fan of Barriers to Entry, this episode should be at the top of your queue. Bobby, why do we love this episode so much?
Well, Lisa was my favorite presenter at South by Southwest 2024, and she took us behind the scenes of her part at South By, and it's going to go even deeper in our conversation with her.
Yeah, amazing conversation about innovation, about sustainability, and about a European award that's about to take the US by storm.
Make sure to subscribe or follow Barriers to Entry wherever you get podcasts to hear our episode with Lisa Gralnick and to be notified when new episodes drop.
So So you were commissioned by Paris 2024 to design the Olympic torch. Give us a little bit of background on how you approached that project. And we know that that also includes the Games Cauldron. And I think that we'd be really interested to know, how was your approach towards designing those pieces different from those who have had that same honor in the past?
The first thing was for me to avoid to spend too much time investigating the past of the Olympic torch and to arrive in this field as most virgin as I can get. So fully blank, like a blank page, and not to be too much informed about the past. The second thing is, for me, the most relevant clients and the most interesting commission, most of the time, do not arrive as with a very large brief. You know, no mood board, no inspiration. I should use no any clues about what they are expecting. What I was explaining with head of the hospital department, it was arrived with no brief.
Right.
There was no brief. And with Paris 2024, of course, the brief was the torch and the cauldron, nothing else. Mm-hmm. They explained to me that we have some ideas, some intuitions. They may have some inspiration, but they force themselves to do not put them into the brief. And the brief was actually the flame needs to be remain up during all the relay. The weight needs to be quite light to be able to make any relay bearers able to carry the torch. And the size needs to be between 60 and 70 centimeters just to be visible by the public and to avoid to burn the airs of the relay bearers. That's all. So they told me they remain open to answer any question, to provide any information, but they accept that if they choose one designer or one creative people, they trust him or they trust her to do the job. Mm. From that, they decide to open a competition. And it was a closed competition. I mean, they pre-select 12 designers, French designers, and giving this very light brief, as I explained. And from that, we had 1 month to propose a torch and a cauldron. As I did, and for any project, I always propose one thing. I never propose different options.
Mm, right.
I never understood that for the creative people to propose several options for me, because for me, just like a doctor, you know, a doctor, if you're going to see the doctor because you have pain, I never saw any doctor who said, okay, you can take those pills, the red ones, but I do have this syrup, a red, yellow, that is good also. No, it's impossible. So, of course, in the creative process, we go through many different ideas, options, inspiration, but I always propose one thing. This is the only one I strongly believe in. So I propose the idea for the torch, for the cauldron, and maybe 2 weeks after, I received a phone call, told me, okay, we select you, Mathieu.
Mm. That's so cool.
And the cauldron will be unveiled this summer. Is that true?
Yes, probably. Traditionally and historically, the cauldron is the last chapter of the opening ceremony. Mm-hmm. The opening ceremony in Paris will be on the two banks of the Seine River.
They're not in a stadium for the opening ceremony?
Not in a stadium for the very first time.
That's very cool.
It's gonna be amazing. Just to give you an example. As you know, traditionally, all the countries and teams and delegation arrived in the stadium with the flag. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, but quite boring, you know? So here, all the countries will arrive by boat.
That's so cool.
One boat per country, one boat per delegation.
Some of the boats will be quite small. I hope that that's going to be...
Of course. You're right. And it's going to be beautiful and probably sometimes funny because probably the U.S. boat is going to be a huge one.
Well, they'll make sure of that, yes.
Of course. And probably from tiny countries with very few athletes, it's going to be, I don't know, maybe just...
A raft or like a canoe or who knows. Wow.
Just paddling alone, but And even this probably going to be super beautiful and moving. And it's going to be full of audience because in a stadium, it's only VIPs, many of them, thousands of them, of course. Mm-hmm. But here in around the Seine River, they are waiting about 600,000 people.
Oh,
you know?
My.
Unbelievable.
So, yes, it's going to be amazing.
This is a good promo to watch this opening ceremony. This sounds incredible.
Yes, you have to.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And the last relay bearer that is always a kind of iconic people coming from sport field or not, but usually yes, and will arrive and to light up the cauldrons with the last torch.
That's so amazing.
Very cool.
Tess and I are Canadian, and there's nothing that gets me feeling more Canadian than the Olympics, I have to say. So, you know, what did it feel for you, or did you have a particular reaction to getting that phone call and being chosen? Because, like, I couldn't imagine my country actually calling me to do anything. But, you know, to create the Olympic torch, like, that's incredible. So, you know, what was that day like? What was that feeling like?
You know, I've been more than happy, as you may imagine, but probably for 30 seconds to 1 minute maximum. And just after that, the countdown starts to go on, because it was at the end of January, 2023. And the torch has been revealed in July, 2023. So going from the 3D rendering, that was at this stage during the competition, I was actually not sure that it might be possible to be made, possible to include all the technical elements we need to include into the torch, because it's a very, very complex object, the torch. It appears as simple, but it's super complex inside. In order to get a perfect flame at the right color, at the right size, and whatever the weather condition, being able to always remain beautiful. So the time frame was super short. So the happiness moment was super short. And after that, it was a long process to make a lot of tests, we brought some big fans, for example, in a workshop to test the flame in different condition, because the flame needs to remain beautiful and visible even in the storm, you know. So, and frankly, before the reveal of the torch, and I just very recently took in mind that, wow, I've designed the torch. I've designed the Olympic torches. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super cool, but super recently.
Yeah.
And probably because I discover just after the torch have been revealed that the torch and whatever the design, the torch itself for this edition, but even of course in the past, is a magic object. And as soon as you show it to any people, interested by sport or not, people are just like in front of kind of, yes, something super super rare, super exclusive, super magic. I do remember get some interviews about the torch, and at the end of interviews, open my bags and taking the torch out. And people around was, wow, this is the Olympic torch. You know, for me, it was something, okay, yes, I'm working on this for 6 months. I know every single millimeter, screws, details of it. Okay, it's actually one more object.
Right.
But I keep in mind that, no, it's not. It's not. It's very something very, very special.
And maybe it'll be when you're in your little VIP boat on the Seine and you're seeing it brought to the cauldron. That might be another incredible moment, but congratulations.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful design. We'll be sure to share there's a great little website with the story of it.
Yeah.
That the Olympics committee has put together. So we'll be sure to share that in the show notes from this episode. That's incredible.
So 2024, we've got Paris 2024, which is obviously a monumental story for you, Matthew. You're also rolling into 2024, as we mentioned earlier, as Maison Objet's 2024 Designer of the Year. And as part of that, next week, you're unveiling Autonomy. And just as Andrew shared with the torch, we'll share some photos of Autonomy in the show notes. But I'd love for you to share what your goal was with Autonomy and what's the story you hope it brings forward to those who experience it during Maison Objet.
You know, for Maison Objet Designer of the Year, usually it's you are supposed as a designer of the year to make a kind of retrospective exhibition of your work. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not super interesting to do so because I do make some exhibition in museums, but also in my factory and in the apartments in New York, as you mentioned. So getting just a kind of retrospective exhibition was not super interesting for me. So I wanted to create this opportunity as a project. And for this, I've been inspired by a movement that called survivalism. Mm-hmm. And I'm super interested by this survivalism movement that actually always thinking about a potential collapse of society that might be in terms of sustainability, in terms of politics, or in terms of economics. So the idea of to be able to survive in a world that should turn bad. So I wanted to play on this idea, but not in a too much negative approach, but getting into mind that what if I would decide, you know, I live in Paris, but what if I would decide to move myself and my family a bit far away from Paris, a bit far away from the density, a bit far away from the city, the metropole, all the people around. And if I need to move, what would I want to take with me? What type of comfort I would like to bring with me? What type of technology I would take with me? We often have the question, if you would have to move to an island, what would you take with you? So today, for me, this question, it's not just a kind of a hypothetical question, but something that is a crucial question for all of us to ask. So the idea of autonomy, it's not a final project. It's not a concrete solution. It's just an open discussion for the people we're going to visit. And it's going to be a kind of very simple shelter in order to protect you as a super basic shelter that we have even when we get in the cave, when we are prehistoric people. But to also being able to get your own energy. So we have designed a specific wind turbine that's going to be displayed in the roof. But you need, of course, to think about your food. So we're going to create a kind of specific pond where you can fish. So different type of elements, super basic ones, and to gather all of them into one project.
That's really cool. I love how much just rigor goes into all of these ideas in terms of bringing something something to life. We've talked a lot on our podcast about artificial intelligence, especially of late. And I'm curious, especially as you know, it seems you do an awful lot of prototyping and you know the pre-thought. You take a concept like survivalism. There's many different ways you can go with that.
Yep.
Are you using AI in your current process? And it, regardless of that, I'm just curious broadly of what your thoughts are on the potential of it for the design world in general.
Today, we do not use it. And for one reason mainly, AI is based on the kind of average process. Mm-hmm. It's based on the gathering everything that have been done in one topic, in one subject, and create a kind of average of that and provide you, it's just a kind of super uber mood board. Mm-hmm. And as we know, the mood board, it's mainly filled with project from designers, artists, the one who are trying to making something a bit new, you know. So if I would be inspired by a system, whatever the system and the smartness of the system, if I would be inspired by the system that is based on the average of everything,
yeah,
for me it's not the best way. If I would ask to AI, what could I make in terms of survivalism? Okay, it could provide me a lot of inspiration, but about existing things, only about existing things mixing together. So I always try to work in a different way.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is autonomy, because autonomy, you know, in addition to survivalism, there's like a minimalism angle to it. And I'm wondering if there's any sort of commentary intrinsic in the design of autonomy and the spirit of autonomy that speaks to the way in which individuals or professionally we leverage technologies, whether it's AI or the way we think about the metaverse and virtual environments in our day-to-day lives, because that's certainly not minimalism. Us being on a laptop right now, speaking in four different locations in three different countries, that's not minimalism, especially as compared to autonomy. So was there anything when you were thinking about your design for tied to your honor as Designer of the Year for Maison Objet and when you were designing autonomy, where you were trying to make a commentary on the way in which we live our lives today, or is that just kind of a happy accident, if you will?
The question that is asked, that will be asked to the visitors of Maison et Objet, is super simple. It's, are you ready? Are you ready to live in this solution, in this proposition? And from that, to open the discussion, the project Autonomy would be probably the one I would choose for me and my kids and my wife. Probably another people would wrote different things. But for me, of course, it makes sense to answer this question by a concrete proposal, by physical proposition. Because as we discussed, magic coming from reality. For me, there is no more magic in technology. No more magic. Whatever the complexity, whatever the smartness of technology, when you ask, when you see every single people in front of technology, there are no more magic. Mm. No more magic. It's never enough. Never enough. And even the most advanced AI, you can show it to everyone. So, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? to bring technology, we need to bring reaction in a different way. So, of course, we're going to use Zeus technology for that. But it was so important for me to make it physically.
I think your point about the fact that people are unimpressed by technology as a general cultural statement is a good one. And that people are always, okay, show me what's next. So when you are trying to create these experiences and you are using different types of technology or bringing in different types of collaborators, what is it that is your process to sort of uncover or to think about who you need to bring in or how you need to think about the right elements to bring to that total experience to end up with the magic that we've talked about so much today?
I will answer with an example that Bobby mentioned also in the introduction, that a canopy bed I designed a few years ago for Veuve Clicquot Champagne. Veuve Clicquot Champagne gets a beautiful hotel in Reims, the city of Champagne in France. And in this small, beautiful hotel, actually, they mainly host their VIPs, ambassadors, and so on. And they commissioned me to make the interior design of one room in the hotel. But from that, I asked to the Veuve Clicquot staff, but actually, what will the way that people will come, how many nights they will spend in the room, and so on. And actually, they told me that most of the time they will arrive from Asia, spend one night in Reims, and go to the West Coast the day after. So actually, they're going to spend one night and going to be fully jet lagged. And I took my inspiration from that. I mean, that's okay. So I will not working on the interior design. I will not select the best rugs or curtains or whatever for the room. I don't care, but I will try to offer to this guest the best sleep they can get. And I turn all my energy into the sleep and into the dreams of the people who are going to spend a night in. So from that, I'm not specialist in sleep. I'm not specialist in dreams or whatever, neuropsychologist or whatever. So I spend time to just think what experience I would like to create. So I was imagining Kanye West, for example, arriving in Veuve Clicquot, getting a dinner with a champagne staff and go to the room. And I wanted him to be able to go super faster and deeper into the sleep. So this is all the scenario I start to put in my cerebral mood board. And I didn't want it to make any technology visible. I wanted to be able to anyone to go into the sleep just by touching something that's not a button. But I would like people to go into the sleep, even if they sleep alone, by touching something soft, just like a plant or whatever. So from that, of course, alone, I'm not able to make Kanye West going faster and deeper into the sleep. So I need to find out who is the best specialist in sleep in France, because it's easier for me. So from that, it's quite easy to find out. Yeah. Quite easy to find out few names that's going to be the best specialist of it. And most of the case, those best specialists spend their time to talk to other best specialists. So when a creative people arrive and ask them, I would like you to help me to make people get a better sleep and go deeper and faster into their dreams. They open the doors. They answer any emails and they welcome you to help you. It's always the case because they're super interested to be part of this type of project. And from that, I discover, thanks to the specialists, that the best parameters to make people go into the sleep, it's playing on the light, on the sound, and on the temperature. And actually, and this is a parameter they used for the hospitals and clinical departments for sleep disease. And they playing by a program of lights that are going to dim down very slowly. They're going to reduce the temperature from half degrees to 1 degrees. They're going to reduce the sound for obvious reason. And what is interesting, it's those parameters, and even if you use technology to play with those, are only based with natural parameters. It just, we are supposed, human beings are supposed to go into the sleep when the sun go down. So when the light slowly go down, when, and since the sun go down, the temperature will go down as well. And since the light will go down, the activity will go down. So the sound will reduce. So it was super interesting for me to talk with the specialist and discover that actually I could answer the question by myself because it's supernatural. So we are influenced by the same thing that the prehistoric people were influenced when they were in the cave. So in this type of project, for example, you go from the scenario you want to create, you ask to the specialist, but always keeping in mind what you are looking for. And you use their skill, their knowledge, their informations to build the things.
I love that. And it ties back to one of the things you'd said at the very beginning about always keeping the sketch nearby, right? Like, what's the vision in your head? And then yeah. You know, among all the noise that's going to come in from all these different collaborators, staying true to that sketch, that's incredible.
We need to take care of that, because a project takes from 1 year minimums to a decade. And you are working with your team, with your assistant, and you need to solve many issues during the process, and many renderings, many things, many tests, prototypes, and so on. And sometimes, step by step, and you never noticed it during the process, the idea, the initial idea, lose some part of its energy. And it's impossible to notice it, because it's just day after day. Okay, I need to solve this issue. Okay, I'm going to reduce this a bit. Okay, it's a bit expensive, so I'm going to just reduce the size. Very small details, day after day, step by step. And if one day you don't say, okay, let's make a break, let's open the initial sketch just to be sure we do not have lose the strength of the initial idea. I experienced that sometimes. We said, oh, stop, everybody, stop, wrong way. And everybody was sure that, no, we are just keeping was with the same initial idea since the beginning. I was thinking also, but we don't. So I always, with my team, take the first sketch and put just next to the laptop and the computer, said, oh, yes, you're right. We were sure we would stay on the same way, but on the right way, but we don't.
I love that. Bobby, it's your favorite time of the show.
Cool. Yeah. So Matthew, amazing stories, and particularly love hearing about the solutions you've been crafting, and then incredibly excited for the 2024 you have ahead of you. We've talked a lot about your accomplishments today. I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to share with our listeners that you're excited about, that you and your studio are working on right now, or anywhere you'd like for folks to check out regarding the work you have.
90% of our time and of energy, it's dedicated to our own collection. So for the reason I explained before, when you work for another brand, for any editor, your initial idea, that it's always fragile at the beginning, gonna lose too many parts of it. So recently we decide to create our own piece. We develop in our studio, we are prototyping it. So, and we sell it to the final client. So by this way, and today, all my time and my team's time is dedicated on our own collection. So we are continuously developing new ideas, new project, new pieces, and I soon they are ready. They fly to New York in our pied-à-terre, in the apartment you mentioned, to be shown to the potential clients. So I love the fact that we have been able step by step to build this ecosystem, and being able to go from the very initial idea to the final resolution. So we do have some additional project, but to answer your question, the next ones, you're going to be the first invited when they will be ready and revealed in the pied-à-terre.
Amazing.
Love that. Love that. And to see some of what Matthew's working on, go to matthewlenore.fr/works to see his pieces, places, solutions, and some more of the story behind Matthew in a studio.
Sounds like something for the show notes, Bobby. We'll definitely.
We will definitely throw it in the show notes.
Well plugged, Bobby. Well plugged.
Thank you.
Well, it's certainly on my list to check out. I can't wait to see it. So Matthew, every episode we love to ask our guests the same question, which is, what piece of advice would you give our listeners or resources that you would share for anyone who's just interested in kind of learning more about the work that you do, the space that you're in, or even just this industry in general?
Probably my advice would be to avoid to read too much design magazine and design blogs. I will get a lot of enemies, and sorry for that. But you, as a creative people, you cannot get inspiration from other designers. Because by definition, other designers get inspiration from raw food or raw materials, and they have been inspired of it and turn it into something. So if you are eating, if you are inspiring by something that have been already eaten, there is no more energy inside, no more nutrients if we talk about food. So my best advice is to close design magazine, to close design books, and to try to find inspiration, ideas, input from fields as far as you can from your initial one. As far as you can, you will get some raw information, raw materials that your job, my job, is to turn it into object, probably for the design world, but with nutrients coming from very far away from that.
Very well said.
We've talked a lot on the pod about this idea of edit culture, and I love that you're taking your edits from, again, the furthest possible sources of inspiration. This has been, I think, educational for the three of us. Bobby, I have to ask before we head out, how did you feel as a marketer who are the kings of the kings and queens of the here's your three options, to hear from Matthew to only ever pitch one creative concept? Because like that's just counterintuitive to everything every marketer slash salesperson's ever been told.
I mean, I think on the creative side, you know, when you go in as a creative studio with a pitch, you always have the pitch that you want the client or the partner to choose. And then you've got the pitch you think the client wants. And then you've got the pitch that you know they won't like, that they'll that they'll glaze over. So I think Matthew's smart in terms of skipping the two that he doesn't want the client to choose and just going with the one that he thinks is best. And I think based on Matthew's portfolio, he's earned the right and the respect to be able to do that. I think that's probably something that we should all strive to have the confidence to be able to do. The other thing I'll say, by the way, is I would encourage everybody to occasionally read a magazine.
I was going to say, I think that part's going to be a big one. Censored end of the pod, but great advice.
I agree with the spirit of Matthew's advice, though, for sure.
Be sure that the clients will trust you definitely more if you only show one proposition.
Because they'll know you're bought into it. Yeah.
That's the good second piece of advice for all of us. Do you want to take us home, Tess?
I will take us home. Thank you, Matthew. Today was incredible, emotional, insightful. We've learned so much. We're so happy to have you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Also want to thank our Barriers to Entry production team, our producer, Rob Schulte, and today's producer, Hannah Beatty, and everyone else back at the Studio by Sandow Podcave. Barriers to Entry is part of the Surround Podcast Network. Make sure you go to surroundpodcast.com, and that is podcast with an S. Smash the follow button and join us next time as we continue to break down the barriers to entry.
A great little website, the Olympics website.
Yeah, that one.